This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Anne Jones here, and you're listening to Off Track, the ABC's program, all about nature and the environment. And this is one from the archives, originally made in 2013, not too long ago, and about a perennial topic in Australia, the existence of big cats in the bush.
I can still visualise a thing. It had a big buff head, so it was most probably a big male. It was sitting on its backside. I didn't see its tail until it jumped off. The thing was jet black, big head, small ears, very muscular in the shoulders. It was probably nearly a metre high at the shoulder. Extreme speed, just accelerated away.
It was feline, was well over 2 metres long, massively muscled. It was trying to get away from us as we approached with a sort of belly crawl, slinking along. And it had the most malevolent stare I've ever seen any animal give me. Glared at me with these very big yellow eyes. The total sighting couldn't have lasted more than a few seconds, but it was imprinted on my mind.
Rumours of big cats roaming the Australian bush have been alive for at least a century, and today we're in search of this elusive idea. Or is it a creature? Two of the country's most determined big cat myth enthusiasts are Simon Townsend and John Turner. They've spent over 20 years gathering evidence in Victoria. And for Off Track, Dylan Bird joins them on one of their adventures as they set off to the Otway Ranges. Now, this episode was originally hosted by Amanda Smith, so you'll hear from her too.
John, meet Dylan.
Hi, how's it going?
G'day, Dylan.
Hi, nice to meet you.
I'm just having a late breakfast.
No worries.
Right.
So where are we heading off to?
We've got a dead sheep that we
set up the other day.
That we've set up.
Up there.
Yeah. We'll go in and have a look at it and see if anything's touched it yet, because it's only been there for a week. We've got four cameras on it, which you'll see.
So that's the cameras?
Oh, okay. Tiny little things. They're digital infrared motion sensors. They've got a date that prints on every photo. And it prints the temperature, what time of day it is.
Yeah.
So we've got an accurate record of everything. These are our DNA kits.
That's what we're doing. This is where we've gone to now.
Yeah. So what's involved in this?
Taking tissue samples from bite marks on animals. In our kit we have sterile surgical gloves, specimen containers. What's this stuff called, Tom?
Ethyl alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Swabs and sterile containers to put any, what we hope would be saliva samples.
Mm.
Once you get into this and you learn how to get the confidence of people, everybody you talk to will know somebody that's either they've seen a cat or somebody they know is everybody.
Yeah.
Like not just one in 100, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, John. Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's go.
All right.
Who's in the front? That's where we're going.
Those blue hills.
The blue hills there.
That's the sun.
It's not far away.
Accounts of big cat sightings in southern Australia have been around since the 19th century. David Waldron is a historian and the co-author of Snarls from the Tea Tree, a book about big cats and the folklore surrounding them.
It was a story I grew up with around Gippsland. I'd heard this story since I was young and I thought, well, may as well get into the bottom of it and trace out the history.
And what is it that's really interesting in your view about this kind of folklore around big cats?
Well, what it really struck me, and of course is coming out of my own point of view as a historian, I'm less concerned with the whole are they there or not. What interested me was the story's been around for a long time, since at least the goldfields in Victoria. The context which it originated were issues like people trying to come to terms with a very alien landscape. Of course, we had the Acclimatisation Society there releasing all kinds of strange animals in the Victorian bush. We had the first travelling menageries. There was a thriving exotic animal trade. And the issues caused by these animals getting loose and breeding and running amok, I mean, specifically, of course, the most famous is rabbits. And overwhelmingly, the literature of the time is what happens if this occurs, and what happened with the rabbits happens with something a lot larger and more dangerous.
Where specifically is the root of this kind of, the idea there's a panther, some kind of big cat that's not a domestic breed of cat?
Well, where it first comes from was people making sense of stock kills that didn't fit the pattern we normally ascribe to dingoes and dogs, and taking their experiences from Africa and India and applying them to Australia. You'd have people who'd spent time building railways, farming, clearing land in Africa and India, particularly South Africa, coming here, finding these stock kills and saying, these match what my experiences were like in Africa. So it creates a, to me, really interesting line where Australia in the 19th century is a lot more cosmopolitan than we think of it, and that we're laterally connected to Malaysia, India, and Africa, all as part of the British Empire. And, you know, they're things we don't think about much. We like to think Australia and England, but we don't think about us being part of this, you know, global commonwealth.
Is one of the ideas early on that there was this kind of cat that broke free from a travelling menagerie or that came with people?
You did have problems of individual animals getting loose. I wouldn't call it common, but it was certainly not unheard of. So the Victorian government and the South Australian government would, time after time, when panic reached a fever pitch, go out, shoot the biggest wild dog they could find, a black one if they could, and present that as the real culprit. And the most famous of these was the Tantanula tiger that was around Mount Gambier in 1892 to 1895, which was came out after St Leon's Mammoth Circus travelled through there and lost a Bengal tiger. So the alpine dingo they shot is still on display in the pub there, and the pub still got all the paraphernalia of that panic from the 1890s. It's a great yarn, actually. They ended up having Afghan shikari come over and roughing them 100 pounds apiece to hunt tigers around Mount Gambier in Western Victoria, and arming huge numbers of people out combing the bush for tigers.
Do you have a hypothesis about what sort of large cat it is, whether it's a type of puma or a leopard?
My personal opinion is that we've got two species in Victoria.
I'm taking a punt that we've got Californian pumas, because that's the nearest population of pumas to Australia, or possibly South American, where they might have been brought here during the gold rush. And with the black cats, because they never see spotted ones here, just black ones, probably Malaysian leopards, which are nearly all black in Malaysia.
But these animals, whatever they are, they're highly intelligent animals. They're not afraid of humans. You know, we have many reports of one of these things looking in the window of somebody's farmhouse late at night. You know, they'll be watching television, look up, and there'll be this thing looking at them through the window. So they're certainly not terrified or afraid of humans.
I can't be sure, but they're probably spread from southeastern South Australia through the Otways and Grampian Ranges and the Great Dividing Range up into New South Wales along the same range line. The whole population, if they're there, they probably are, but I can't say that for sure. If they're there, there might only be 100 animals spread over hundreds of thousands of square kilometres of country. Immense country, full of food, full of game, tremendous cover.
There's all sorts of stories about how a big black cat escaped into the wild. And after years of reported sightings, both the Victorian and the New South Wales governments have produced reports that assess the evidence. Peter Menkhorst is a zoologist with the Department of Environment and Primary Industries and the lead author of the Victorian Report. What was the most, from your perspective, interesting, if not convincing, evidence that you compiled and found?
Well, we didn't find a great deal of interesting evidence. There was really no definitive primary evidence at all. There's a mountain of anecdotal evidence and people who've claimed to have seen particular things, but one can't really do anything more with those pieces of information. There was one interesting case of a scat, a faecal pellet that came in from an area near the Otway Ranges in southern Victoria. And that scat was subjected to analysis by Barbara Triggs, who's an expert on the analysis of faecal pellets from carnivorous mammals. So Barbara Triggs looked at this scat and decided that it was different. It was quite distinctive in its odour and in its colour and form. And she extracted some black hairs from that scat, which when she analysed them microscopically, well, looked very much like hairs taken from a black leopard that was at Melbourne Zoo at the time. Some years later, a researcher at Melbourne University extracted DNA from those hairs, and that also lined up with leopard DNA.
So what explanation could there be for that then?
Well, we don't really have an explanation.
we still don't have really strong information about how it came to be in the northern part of the Otway Ranges. It was just picked up by a farmer down there and handed into the government department.
Okay, and so that's the only one you know of that can't be explained through, you know, scientific evidence or logic or anything like that?
That's right, yeah. There was another large black cat that was shot by a hunter in Gippsland a few years ago, received quite a lot of publicity. Unfortunately, the hunter didn't keep the specimen, so this large cat was photographed and then thrown away, except for the tail. And we managed again to get some fur from that tail, and that was analysed by the genetics department at Monash University and found to be a very large domestic cat. So there's no convincing evidence of a wild population of unknown carnivorous animal in Victoria. But we left the findings open to a degree. We're certainly not saying definitively that these things don't exist, but we're saying it's surprising that there isn't some definitive evidence, especially given the comparatively large amount of fauna survey work and wildlife research that's been done in Victoria.
So why is it then that you don't want to rule out that they could exist?
Well, it's partly that there are all these perfectly intelligent, reasonable people out there who say they've seen one. And, well, it's almost impossible to say something does not exist. You can't prove that something does not exist, but you can prove that it does exist, and we haven't been able to do that.
As you alluded to before, these stories have been around for a long time, and it seems that every few years it pops up again, whether a report's come out or there's been more sightings in a particular area. Why do you think people are so intrigued by this particular story?
I think there's a lot of romance around it, and just the idea that there might be something mysterious and, you know, ever so slightly dangerous out there.
What is it about big cats that you find so interesting? I mean, what is it about the sort of mystery that keeps you going?
Well, just the fascination of something that officially doesn't exist in Australia. I know it exists. I would like to prove that they're out here. No, the reason I don't have a skin hanging on the wall, you know, or the head mounted hanging on the wall, I'd just like to prove to myself and lots of sceptics, and certainly the government, who have given us a bit of grief over this. So I'd like to prove them wrong. It's a bit worrying what will happen when we do prove that cats exist, because the government will have to do some sort of official policy on what to do. They'll never be able to clear them out. They'll have to, I imagine, have to make people aware that these things exist in the bush.
So when did you set this bait?
Last Friday. If an animal walks in through here, because we've got a drag trail through here, the three of us can't smell, but it's here.
So you drag the sheep through this shrub? Yep.
The cats use these trails.
Holy Jesus.
Whoops. So do you want to talk me through what you can see?
Well,
yeah, sure. Well, that didn't look like that the other day.
This was a full sheep. The fact that all the face has been eaten too.
Yeah, that's interesting. Nose is chewed off.
So we've got basically a sheep that's whole gut's been taken out.
Pretty much eaten.
Yeah, yeah. And its face has been eaten.
Yeah.
See how there's no blood inside?
No, it's chewed off the ribs.
Right. It's all been licked out.
What? This is serious.
There's a bit of meat taken, a lot. Maybe 5-10 kilos.
I just want to see if there's any broken bones. But no.
It's not often it works this quickly, you know. It's a long, slow walk.
This is really exciting.
What were you expecting?
A rotting body.
Yeah, with nothing having visited. Well, let's grab those cards.
It seemed our search had taken an unexpected turn. This made for an exciting drive back to the house to examine the photos.
Okay, so now here's the time, and that's the temperature.
Bloody cold.
What do we got?
So it only takes a picture when it senses movement.
Is that yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
But so that was the one that was furthest away.
Oh, this might be more interesting.
Ah, here we go.
There's the carcass.
Look.
What?
No, that's a tail feathers.
Oh! You're right, you know. By golly. Okay, right. Let's have a look at a few more.
Here he is.
It's a wedgie.
Well, there's a lot of meat gone for one bird.
No, it's probably more than one wedgie.
Yeah, okay. There's two.
There you go. What a field day they've had of it. Now, you've got to think of it. In Australia, wedge-tailed eagles are the largest flying carnivore there is. I was hoping for something else, though. In a sense, what we've done is we've succeeded in catching images of a carnivore. Not the carnivore we're after, but an interesting bird all the same.
It's a little bit disappointing, then, yeah. Is it, not to have found what you're looking for?
Oh, look, we can't afford to be disappointed or we'd stop doing what we do. This is an ongoing process of one's personal life and research. That's all there is to it. Mm. No, we're not going to stop.
Definitely. You know, we've invested in 16 cameras we've got out. So I suppose I'd just like to prove to myself and a lot of other people that these things do exist.
I'm Amanda Smith and this is Off Track. Now, the Victorian Government report concluded that signs and sightings of the panther are in all likelihood mostly going to be feral cats. Tony Buckmaster is from the Invasive Animals Cooperative Research Centre. He studied feral cats in East Gippsland in Victoria. So what's particular about a feral cat?
Well, a feral cat is exactly the same species as the domestic cat that's currently sitting on the end of most people's beds. There's no differentiation between a domestic cat, a stray cat and a feral cat. They just all form one big long continuum.
Are they, though, as I've heard tell, bigger than your usual pet pussycat?
That is one of the common myths about feral cats, that they're larger and their fangs have grown longer and their claws are longer. A lot of the morphological studies that have been undertaken on feral cats in Australia have shown that's not to be the case. I found with my research in Victoria, the biggest cat that I caught was just on 6 kilograms, yet I have a 10-kilogram domestic cat sitting on the end of my bed at the moment.
Right, yeah.
The other thing with feral cats is they're great survivors. The cat has never lost, even after thousands and thousands of years of domestication, it's never lost the hunting instinct. So a domestic cat that you might have or some person might have and then they decide they no longer want it and they unfortunately take the option of dumping the cat in the wild, that cat is going to survive because it still has all those skills that it needs to catch prey and kill prey.
How many feral cats are there in Australia then? How big a problem is this?
The thing is, we don't know. Because cats are so cryptic, they're so very hard to study, the best estimates that we have are somewhere between 5.3 million and 18 million feral cats in Australia.
Yeah, that's a big variation.
It is. It's a huge variation. And it varies quite a lot with season as well. I know in the centre of Australia where we have boom and bust seasons, feral cat numbers increase following a boom season because their prey's increased. And then when the bust season comes, the prey numbers collapse and eventually the cat numbers collapse as well. So it's very cyclical and variable.
How many would you have seen in the course of your research actually seen in the wild?
Very few, actually. Driving through the forests of East Gippsland, particularly of a night, I expected to see quite a few feral cats, but they prefer to remain hidden. And because of their coat colour, which is usually the feral ones are usually a blotched tabby, they're very good at camouflage. So you could drive or walk right past a feral cat and not even know that it's there.
So does this mean, Tony, it's also hard to really know how much harm they're doing to native fauna, their predation rates?
The predation rates are really hard to work out because you don't know how many feral cats there are. You don't know how much predation pressure there is being placed on a prey population. The reality of it is, unless the predation pressure of the feral cats is actually reducing that prey population's abundance, it's not really having an impact on the prey population. An example of that is with, say, bush rats. The environment can only support a certain number. So a number of bush rats die each year. But if a feral cat takes one of those and eats it, that means that the food that that one would have normally eaten is available for another rat that may survive. So they're what's called the doomed surplus. They were going to die anyway, and the cats are just predating on those. It does become a problem when we have a rarer endangered species and the cats then selectively predate on those and the numbers of those species then decline.
What's the favourite food of a feral cat?
The favourite food of feral cats in areas where there are rabbits is young rabbits.
Ah, so well, that's perfect, isn't it? One introduced pest eating another?
Unfortunately, that was the thinking back in the late 1800s when the rabbit explosion happened.
Yeah.
And feral cats, or domestic cats in reality, were bred up and released into the wild in Central Australia to try and combat the rabbit plague.
Yes, it's the age-old story with introduced pests in this country, isn't it?
It is, but in areas where there's not rabbits available or the rabbit population is very cyclic, the cats will predate on any small mammals, lizards and birds. And unfortunately, cats prefer live prey, so very rarely do they actually come back and consume the prey that they've already killed. They'll eat till they're full, and then the next time they're hungry, they'll go and predate on something else rather than come back and eat what's left of the prey.
All right. Well, so to methods of control, now, given that feral cats are exactly the same species as our beloved pet pussycats, does that present particular problems as far as trying to control the feral population goes?
It presents quite a few unique problems because the cat itself is in a unique position of being both a really loved family pet as well as being a despised feral predator. Some of the biological control methods we just can't use because they would infect the domestic cats as equally as they would the feral cats. Cat distemper, which is a similar type of virus to the more recent canine parvoviruses that have been found, has been used on remote islands where there's no domestic cats as a method of control, but it's just something that we'd never be able to use in the Australian mainland because of the risk to domestic cats.
Now, on the science show here on RN a couple of weeks ago, a PhD student, Sally Hall, was talking about her research into non-surgical sterilisation of introduced pest animals to stop them from being able to breed, essentially. Now, Sally's one of your students, I think. Is her research method going to work where others haven't?
Yes, her research is going to work in that eventually, and once it becomes more species-specific towards feral cats, if it's developed down those lines, it will definitely work. It will form one of the weapons that we have in our arsenal against feral cats. It's not going to be the magic bullet that people might think it could be. Because
why is that?
Any cat, or every cat, has to be susceptible to the method of delivery. So it's going to be delivered through, for example, a bait, then every cat would need to be able to take that bait. And that's generally not the case in the wild. There will be cats that won't eat a bait, or there'll be those that just aren't anywhere near where the baits are dropped.
The other method, I think, is through injection too. And, of course, you've got to catch them first.
You've got to have the cat in the hand to do the injection. So it's not going to be the magic bullet to control feral cats across Australia, but it's definitely going to be a worthwhile weapon in our arsenal.
The extraordinary thing, as your PhD student Sally Hall made clear in the science show, and as you know only too well, so far no feral animal species has been eradicated from the Australian mainland. Is that, though, the ultimate aim? Or, for example, say with feral cats, is it a kind of manageable coexistence that's more realistic?
The reality of it is, as Sally said, no established pest has been eradicated from the Australian mainland. We have had success on a number of islands, right up to quite large islands, and even though Australia is an island in itself, it's too large to be able to perform a viable eradication. What we'll have to do, and what we're starting to do, is moving away from looking at the pests themselves and looking at the damage that they're doing and then managing for the damage that they're actually doing.
So, by the way, Tony, in all the time that you've spent in the bush studying feral cats, have you ever caught a glimpse of a big cat, the Victorian panther of legend?
I can honestly say that after 5 years researching in Far East Gippsland and having a number of remote cameras out there and having been in the area for many, many months and going through the forest both during day and night and having thousands upon thousands of photographs from remote cameras, even in times that the panther was reported to be in the area, I've never actually seen the famed panther.
Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it's not there.
All the stories about the origin of the panther, from circus train crashes to released pets from World War II Air Force squadrons. Once you start looking at those, the reality is it may have happened. There may have been a train crash at some point and a panther escaped, but it would have to be the world's longest living panther. And for a panther released from an Air Force squadron in 1942, there's no chance that panther would still be alive today.
Tony Buckmaster is the Education Leader for the Invasive Animals Cooperative Research Centre at Canberra University.
Amanda Smith presented this episode for Off Track, which I've plucked from the Off Track back catalogue. My name is Anne Jones, and remember, meet me here at the same time next time. That's when I'll take you somewhere else.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.